seconds to comply.
I think you'd better do what he says, Mr. Kenny.
You have 60 seconds to comply. Part man,
part machine,
all pod. So this is the second minute of RoboCop. I think traditional for you, Connor, to... by the way, my name is Simon. I think it's traditional for you, Connor, to review the minute.
Yes, so this minute begins with, "Good morning, I'm Casey Wong with Jess Perkins," and ends with some TV doctor saying, "Extended warranties, financing."
You pick the heart. Oh, no, the last line is, "And remember, we care."
Yes. I think that might be in the next minute, though.
No, I just checked on the footage.
Oh, okay.
That's the thing. It's a full minute of media break, basically.
Hmm.
Or at least the TV show within a movie.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see how well this movie cuts up into minutes, because Ridley Scott's films actually do work minute by minute very nicely, because he had a background in commercials.
Oh. So
that's kind of how he thinks.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
That makes a bit of sense. It's funny how many, dare I say, auteuristic directors do have a background. I mean, say what you will about Michael Bay and like the likes of Zack Snyder, they do have this commercial ground, and you can see it, how it affects a lot of their filmmaking. You know, it's fancy, but maybe not necessarily deep. It's like shortcuts, and we're not talking about those auteurs. We're talking about Paul Verhoeven.
Yeah, which I don't think he had a background in commercials, so...
No, I think he's just a background in being an utterly crazy German.
Yes.
And we love him for it. So the funny thing is, this episode starts off with the talk about nuclear confrontation.
Yes.
Particularly in South Africa.
Yeah, against their own citizens, apparently. They have a neutron bomb.
Made by the French.
Made by the French. And they're going to use it on their own civilians.
Yeah. It feels weird to say that kind of, in many ways, it dates the film, like the nuclear war, constant panic, the red threat, all that.
The apartheid still going on.
Yeah, and it's funny that it does date it, but at the same time, it's incredibly relevant.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I see it as an alternate 1980s. So it's sort of like how... I actually see this in comics, like the X-Men. It's set in that time, but a little bit different.
Well, comics, like, don't about DC, because they keep resetting the universe. But Marvel works on what they call a 10-year sliding scale.
Yeah, that's true.
So, whereas before, when Tony Stark became Iron Man, it was the Vietnam War? No, it was a Korean War. It was one of those wars.
One of them was.
As time went on, we can't have him be getting his heart exploded in the Korean War. We better make it a Vietnam War. I can't have it that. We slide it along. So yeah. That's kind of why, in like, you know, the Iron Man movie, he's in Afghanistan.
Yeah, now Franklin and Valeria Richards are born in after 2010.
Oh, God, that's weird.
No.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Franklin Richards has been like a kid for 30 years.
Actually, they are only just now letting them grow up a little bit. So they're about 5 years older.
Well, Valerie was like, how squeaky is that? And the whole thing of her parentage is just so weird. But like, you know, Franklin Richards was like a kid. Yeah, he was born in like late 70s, early 80s.
60s, actually.
Was it? No, yeah. No, it could not be in the 60s.
I know. I didn't believe it. Franklin doesn't come along till way late. Oh, no, it was the 60s. Okay.
No way. I'm fucking Googling this. I don't care. This gets taken out. I'm Googling the shit out of this. Because I want to know. Yeah, I remember, like, in pretty much throughout the entire 80s, there was, like, his crossover with Power Pack and all this other stuff. The gag was he had the 4.5 t-shirt.
Which is adorable.
Which kind of is.
1968.
He appears in 1968?! Oh,
yep.
Shit!
They didn't fuck around.
Oh, wow! I thought 70s. Okay, he didn't receive his name until this 1970. But man, that's the oldest child since Ben Shapiro.
Facts don't care about your feelings.
Anyway, back to media break.
Yeah.
It's funny how, like, you know, some of these older films, you don't expect them to kind of hold up, but I guess war movies have a kind of, almost like a reoccurring motif. Mm. The world is shit, and capitalism is going to exploit it, which is pretty much 2020.
Yeah. Nothing changes.
Nothing changes.
In Metal Gear, like, war never changes.
Speaking of wars, there's also the drop of the Star Wars orbiting space... the orbiting peace platform.
Yes. Also going to say, so in the last minute we did mention, so these aren't real news anchors, but I think they might have actually based the characters around these people specifically, because I looked into it.
It wouldn't surprise, because they're so good and they're so natural. And...
yeah, so the character Casey Wong, you know, his surname was Wong, and I thought, oh, that's interesting. So is the actor of Chinese heritage? So yeah, his name is Mario Mercado, and he is Chinese-Portuguese of heritage. And so I get, you know, I'd be curious to see what the initial script looked like and if they... just change names around and stuff.
The funny thing I wanted to talk about is, because I've got the discs with the audio commentaries, there's a couple of really interesting notes that they talk about, and that is, so Ed Neumeier, who was the writer, he actually thought that the South African bit was going to be a bit dated when they were putting it into the movie. So this was probably shot about 1986 for 1987. So obviously the writing was on the wall already about, you know, what was going on with South Africa and apartheid, because I'm trying to remember when that finished, but I want to say it was like about 1989-ish, because the Berlin Wall was around about the same time.
Yeah, late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, so he finally thinks it's actually a bit outdated, and it's funny because there's still conflict in that part of the world, and I don't think there'll ever not be.
And especially racial conflict right now is as topical now as it's ever been, so I think even if apartheid in South Africa specifically will become more dated as time goes on, the underlying political issues aren't going to change anytime soon, probably, sadly.
No, and this was the time when it was, apartheid, so... And this media break actually said specifically it was the white ruling party, or something along those lines.
Yeah, like something pretty explicit like that.
Yeah. It's great that they base a lot of the politics of this world on relevant political issues of the day, and it's amazing how grounded that actually helps it, especially compared to the remake, which we'll go into in a bit.
Oh, can't wait for minute two of the RoboCop remake. But the Star Wars project, so they are referencing the Star Wars project here, which was not its actual name. There was a Stargate project.
No, it was the media colloquialism, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I looked into it. So it is President Reagan's strategic defense initiative. And according to history.com, they say, from the start, politicians and scientists argued that the SDI was overambitious. The technical hurdles required to achieve SDI, which included a number of proposed designs and weapons, not just space-based lasers. What the fuck is he, Dr. Evil? Seemed so incredible at the time that Massachusetts Senator Edward Kennedy referred to it as reckless Star Wars schemes, and the Star Wars moniker stuck.
Yeah.
Over the course of 10 years, the government spent up to $30 billion on developing the concept, but the futuristic program remained just that. Futuristic.
Yeah.
It was formally scrapped by Bill Clinton in 1993.
Like, so this movie was made, what, 3 or 4 years after Return of the Jedi?
Yeah.
So Star Wars, still deep within the popular culture, can argue it never has left.
Mm.
So it makes a bit of sense that someone wanting to tear down a really ambitious, maybe not well-conceived bit of space technology as, you know, referencing space wizards.
Yes.
So according to the audio commentary, they were actually talking about this, and John Davison, the producer, because I'm never going to not reference who they are, because I need to remind myself, oh God, listening to two white guys of very similar voices and trying to pick who is who.
Yeah.
The great thing about Paul Verhoeven, he is unique.
Yes.
He has a great speaking voice, and he's utterly crazy to you. And exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah, and the two of us, we have different accents, different vocal range. It's fine. Very, very fortunate.
It would be utterly confusing if we both sound exactly the same. It's funny because it actually dates this, pretty much, this audio commentary, because it says, it's funny, like, 15 years later that the US government are trying to do Star Wars, again, referencing W.
Mm.
So that would be, like, what, 2002, 2003?
Yeah.
And then, almost just over 15 years later, we have Space Force.
Oh, and then you got Elon with his space bullshit as well, so it's just... Oh,
goddamn Elon.
Yeah.
You...
lots of too powerful, too stupid people.
I just wish he would just go full supervillain and just have done with it.
Oh yeah, a friend of mine and I have bets on who's going to become Lex Luthor in the real world first. Is it Jeff Bezos? Is it Elon Musk? Is it Donald Trump? Oh. It could go any which way.
Trump won't be Lex Luthor.
My money's actually on Bezos.
Yeah, but Bezos could be full Lex Luthor. He's even got the haircut.
Yeah.
I see Elon Musk more as a Hank Scorpio,
yeah,
but without the chump or the actual good nature.
Yes. Yeah, no, that's a good point. You know, Lex, at least the Clancy Brown version, is very charismatic.
So good.
Whereas Donald Trump's more like the one in the original movie.
Don't you mean Zack Snyder's Lex Luthor? It's got a terrible
haircut. No. Zack Snyder's Lex Luthor is bloody Ben Shapiro.
Yeah, true.
Frankly, I find this whole thing a waste of time.
Or maybe, because he does look like the Facebook guy. Zuckerberg, yeah.
So you're basically comparing Donald Trump to Gene Hackman. I can't have that. I can't have that.
Just the character Gene Hackman played, you know, not actually.
It's funny going back to that basically version of Superman, you know, 77? Oh, no, the same year as Star Wars, wasn't it?
I think it was the same year as Star Wars, I think.
Either way, it's funny that I still think that movie holds up better than any other Superman movie when it comes to Superman.
Oh, absolutely. I was just thinking about the other day where I went, Henry Cavill is the perfect Superman.
Yeah.
But he's not the perfect Clark Kent, because you see that giant, beefy man with perfect teeth and bone structure walking in with his glasses and his geek chic look going on. You're like, no. I'm sorry, sir, please fuck off. I don't buy this. You are a superhuman.
There's a comic somewhere, I can't remember, I think it might be one of the 80 pages.
How do you do, fellow weakling humans?
Hello, fellow humans!
And what got me thinking about it was actually a friend of mine, he does the Tron movies by minute.
Cool.
And he was saying that Bruce Boxleitner looks like the perfect Clark Kent in that movie as Alan Bradley.
Yeah.
And I went, oh yeah, and what is it about? Yeah, he wouldn't work as Superman, but he'd be a very good Clark Kent. And then Henry Cavill's a very good Superman, but not a good Clark Kent. So it's amazing that they found Christopher Reeve and he had whatever it was that made him able to just switch between both so seamlessly.
My favorite section in the entire movie is the post-interview with Lois Lane. It's the scene where Superman, okay, so just on a technical level, this is actually a really cool scene.
Yeah, where he says, you know, stuff like the S, it's not an S, it stands for hope.
Okay, so the S for hope thing is an old comic thing.
Yeah.
It works a lot poorer in the Snyderverse because they don't allow Lois Lane to say Superman because it just has to be reaffirmed by a goddamn military guy, but we'll go into that.
Yeah.
So in the good Superman movie, Lois is dropped off by Superman. He flies off.
It's very cute. I love it.
Whilst Superman is flying off, there's a knock on the door and Lois opens the door and it's Clark. And that...
She barely looks at him.
Yeah, no, but that's great because... So he's Clark when he walks in, Lois goes away, and then see the look on Clark's face when he's going to tell Lois that he's Superman. Christopher Reeve pulls down the glasses, his physical posture changes, he changes into Superman at that moment, physicality, completely Superman, and does the, I have to tell you something, Lois. And he's dead straight Superman. And then in that moment of hesitation, he walks out, puts his glasses back on, and his physicality changes immediately back into Clark Kent.
Yeah.
And it's all one take. The physicality of the acting is amazing.
Really?
And people shit on Christopher Reeve. I don't know why, because as an actor, he is amazing.
I think he is the best Superman. I don't think he's ever been surpassed.
I think Brandon Routh comes close.
They were going for someone who was kind of in that ballpark.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's someone who has, you know, they're tall and they're fit, but they're not built like, well, like Henry Cavill. Well, I don't think someone with his body type has that range. You just physically, you cannot make yourself kind of shrink up when you're that muscular.
Well, here's the funny thing. In the comic books, he does. So there's a comic that actually shows you the differences between Superman and Clark Kent.
Oh, no, I have seen that.
And yeah, it's great. It's like Superman is big, tall, broad shoulders, chest puffed out, and Clark is, you know, hunched over, a little bit meeker. It's a physicality thing. And I think given the right direction, Henry Cavill could probably knock that shit out.
Yeah, maybe. But I think, yeah, there's something about Christopher Reeve's look that gives him that range, and he can quite easily jump between the two. And I also feel like Superman does not need to be built like, well, Batman.
No.
Because, like, even as a child, he could probably lift a plane with one hand, you know?
Well, the conceit is that he was a farm boy for most of his life without the power, so he actually had some musculature just, you know, being corn-fed in the good old... good old hard belt of the country, you know, so...
There's a, I think it's a Vanity Fair interview with Simon Pegg and Henry Cavill.
No.
It is the most bizarre thing to watch these two people sitting side by side. I go, yes, Simon Pegg, real human man, yes, he looks normal. And then you look across at Henry Cavill and just like, what the fuck is that? It looks like it was made with artificial intelligence. It is too perfect. I'm scared.
And here's the funny thing is, both geeks.
I know, yeah. Like, yeah, bloody Joe Manganiello is also into D&D and shit. It's just... Good on them. Good for them.
He's actually, I'm not sure if he still is, but I think he was childhood friends with web cartoonist Scott Kurtz.
I think I heard something about that, yeah.
Yeah, it's actually kind of funny because I remember when on PvP, on the blog post, he was going on about how John got the role of Flash Thompson in the first Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
And he was just like, holy shit! And now he's Deathstroke.
But yeah, there's a lot of crossover with bodybuilding and superhero geek specifically, because I think they look at that physique all the time like, yeah, I want that.
Yeah.
And I used to be into bodybuilding myself before I got sick, and thankfully I haven't lost too much muscle mass. But yeah, like if I was well, I'd definitely be sort of aiming for that as well.
Yeah, it gets completely swole.
Yes.
I'm just swollen. I don't think I've ever made that joke, and I'm not sure it's a good one.
Well, you can delete it if you want.
I'll leave a bad joke in.
We cut to a commercial for artificial heart surgery. So, okay, one, I'm amazed that in America they can advertise pharmaceuticals and medical procedures like this. And two, nice way to establish that there are cybernetics in this universe.
Well, here's the thing. I've done a little bit of research because there's a gag in this where it's the different models of heart. And they mention the Jarvik line, the Series 7 sports heart by Jensen, Yamaha, you picked the heart.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. I always, as a kid, I always got that, like, the Yamaha reference. It's obviously these are all kind of the futuristic mass corporation pumps.
Mm.
Never heard of Jarvik, never heard of Jensen.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you've done any research into this.
Yeah, I looked into Jarvik. So Jarvik Heart is a real company, and it's still in business to this day.
But here's the funny thing is, Jarvik, the company, was created after this movie.
Really?
Created in 1989.
I did not see that.
Jarvik is a real person. Do you know who Jarvik is?
So he's a surgeon, and he was involved in the, I think, the second artificial heart transplant.
He created the artificial heart, essentially.
Mm. So I guess he already had that reputation, so they went, oh, we'll use that name.
How cool is that? That's a reference I did not know, and I was like, I've got to research this. I really should actually do some effort for this podcast.
Yes. Well, that's what we do for Prometheus by Minute, just look into insane minutia, and yeah, you never know when you'll...
It never occurred to me to look into it.
So that's interesting how they sort of created the idea of a Jarvik Heart company, and then the Jarvik Heart company came into existence.
I know. How cool is that?
Yeah.
I had a little look into Jensen, and I can't find anything specific, but there is like Jensen Electronics, Jensen Motors, Jensen Steam Engines. So I think it might just be one of those things that went, oh, that sounds like a company. There's lots of other companies that have that.
Yeah. Sort of a ubiquitous name.
Yeah. I've been waiting to bring that up because I was like, wow, that is really cool.
But they don't actually do, we should probably clarify, there's no artificial hearts just yet, but ventricle assistance devices, so basically pacemakers and stuff like that.
Pacemakers is pretty much it. It's a life-saving piece of kit. You know, there are people alive today because of it, and that is really cool.
Yeah.
It shows you how smart these writers and that of this kind of material.
Well, especially in a time before Googling where you can't just go, heart transplant. Like, you have to be doing a lot of research into newspapers and books and all of that.
Yeah, it really wouldn't surprise me if these guys totally did that just for a one-off line. Although I do have written down that the Doctor is the birth child of Dick Van Dyke and Peter Graves.
Yeah, I can see that.
That lovely kind of grey
foam
of hair.
Yeah, God, Dick Van Dyke, he still looks great, but I don't know about the hair. Is that real? I don't think that's real.
I have no idea. I don't know. This is an 80s movie. It could be a wig. It's funny that Dick Van Dyke, I don't think, looked like that until, like, you know, the 90s.
Yeah. But I'll look up what was his name? Richard Jarvis or Jarvik, I should say.
I'm actually on his webpage, Dr. Richard Jarvik, MD.
Yeah, the personal story in the section of Wikipedia, very interesting. There's some weird stuff in there, like he was in a commercial for some heart medication and he wasn't actually taking the medication, and then also for insurance purposes he wasn't allowed to actually row in the scene where he's supposed to be rowing in a boat, and just some weird shit.
Yeah, but this is where like the pharmaceutical industry and American capitalism starts to get really shady.
Yeah. And because Americans have said to me, oh, you know, they sometimes mention these pharmaceutical commercials, and I go, what?
Yeah.
They can advertise prescription medication?
Yeah.
So what? So a patient is now going to a doctor saying, I want this prescription.
Yeah.
Rather than, hey, maybe we should do some blood tests, maybe look at your diet. No, 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 just prescription.
It's capitalism, man.
Oh, lordy.
Straight up capitalism.
Yeah.
I want the designer heart medication. You know, I want the one with the swirl on it.
Yeah, that had the celebrity endorsement and...
Kanye West endorsed heart medication. Oh, God.
The false heart, the fake heart in this scene, it is huge. Like...
I know!
The human heart is big. So I handle cow hearts and lamb hearts a lot. Yeah, the human heart, I'd probably say somewhere between the two. So, like, this one he's got in his hands, like, two grown man fists.
I know.
And the human heart's probably more like one and a half.
But let's think about it until, like, okay, well, miniaturization, it probably could do it nowadays. But, like, back then, like, the whole idea of pumping device that would be able to mimic a heart would have to be at least that big.
Yeah. Is that why Robocop is so wide and chunky?
Well, yes. Well, let's face it. Does Robocop need a heart?
Well, he's still got an organic brain, so does he need...
How much blood does it need to be pumped into the brain to survive?
Yeah, because there would be blood, but there will be blood.
Yeah, there will be blood.
Yeah, lungs and a heart might still be necessary. I mean, they do that in the Robocop remake.
Yeah, but that's because it's terrible.
Yes, maybe there are some alternatives there that you would just have a more simplified system to supply oxygen and blood. There's actually a procedure that it was in the experimental phase, but for people whose airwaves are blocked, they can actually just inject oxygenated blood directly into your system or something. I have to look it up, but yeah, that's a thing.
Transfusions and stuff like that are, and you know, it's just literally, you know, you can basically circle in and out of blood as long as you've got a functioning pump system. That's all you need. Oxygenation, yeah, that's different, and I don't know biology quite well, but on a technical level, because I've worked in like industries like pool chlorinated regulators, so yeah, you do occasionally get to work with pumps and stuff like that. A heart doesn't have to be that big if the only supply of blood you are running to is the brain. There's nothing in the first Robocop movie to suggest there's no other actual organs apart from the brain.
Yeah,
which would make sense.
Well, he eats.
He does eat. So
I guess he'd have to have a stomach.
I think they mentioned that the baby formula is an internalized compartment.
Oh, yeah. That's very complicated. And also I like to think about, well, we don't know for sure, but I think that's just organic skin on his face, so...
I believe it actually is rubber.
Oh, okay.
There's a reference in Robocop 2 specifically that the face is a reconstruction.
Oh, right. Because in the remake, I think it is his actual face. And so then you have to think, do you have to shave? Will you age? Fat distribution, does that factor in any way?
So this is why Bob Morton got it right. So just keep the bloody organics to a minimum. Because what happens if you get shot in the face? If it's literally just a rubber piece over a metal plate, then, oh yeah, he gets scratched off, replace the skin.
Yeah.
He got a bullet wound to his face. Oh, how are we going to graft that?
Wait, has someone done a Robocop cross-section? Because I would love that.
I don't know. I want to know, though.
Take me back to my childhood with the bloody Star Wars books.
That's way ahead in the future when we actually start to see Robocop take off his mask.
I just want to see Robocop. It's taking too long.
I want to see him without a face.
I actually love him when he removes the visor and then you just see the skin connecting to the... Ah, love it. Robo porn. Or cyborg porn.
Well, no, but if I think about it on a technical level, if all you need to do is to filter, oxygenate blood, all you need is a reservoir for the blood and associated reservoirs for the containment of the other blood. I guess all you need is like an intake valve to bring in the oxygen, which you could purify and all the other... As long as you've got stuff like that, all that could fit in the chest and probably even half the chest. Like a 12-volt pump is like dimensionality, like less than half the size of a credit card. I mean, it's thicker.
Mm.
Realistically speaking, you don't need all the chambers that a normal heart would do. You know, it doesn't have to pump to the extremities of your body. So realistically speaking, you don't need that much force.
Yeah, true.
A heart is a tricky thing to replace because of all the other stuff. Jesus, you got me thinking on how would I build a Robocop in real life?
Yeah, I think by the end of this podcast, we will actually be cybernetics experts. We'll have figured it all out, and then we'll start upgrading me.
I already thought you were a cybernetics expert.
I'm trying.
I've been deluded into thinking I had an expert.
Well, in theory, not in practice.
You do the technical stuff, I'll just make the stuff.
But
you found a cross-section?
I did find a cross-section.
Oh, wow!
But it is not very detailed. Oh. It is complete bullshit, so I'm going to have to do my own, clearly.
Yeah.
Maybe when I finish the podcast.
Yeah, that's... We got time.
Yes. Just speaking on this minute and how nothing is wasted, I think there are definitely movies where a lot of characters are just talking about bullshit and it doesn't go anywhere. It's just filler.
Yeah.
Whereas everything we've seen so far in these first few minutes, it's setting up the world. It's giving us information about even the technology that's available. And
it's perfect world building.
Yeah. Especially since I've gotten into writing myself, there's... You do realize that there's all this fun little problem solving stuff. And most of the time, you know, if you've done your job well, you don't think about it. But the beauty of a movies by minute analysis is that you are really looking at, oh, this is how they've solved this problem. And we know these particular news segments were added after the fact. Yeah. So it's problem solving on top of problem solving.
Obviously, when they did a first pass of the movie, they were just like, oh, we need to punch this up a bit, or we need to add some world building into it. And I think I like the media break because it does add that commonality to the movie, that people know what news is. People knows what news anchors are.
Yeah.
It's a great shortcut into, oh yeah, we're in the future, but they turn around and say, yep, there's war, there's space stuff. We're introducing sci-fi elements almost off the bat.
Mm.
It's a great setup to say, this is the universe you're dealing with. There's space stuff. We're going to have robots.
This came up in, I think, Prometheus, or one of the billions of podcasts I'm doing right now. I don't freaking know anymore.
Billion and one with this one.
But just thinking about, in science fiction, you either have a world that is pretty close to our own, or it's totally removed, and what kind of stories you can tell with those. And I think, you know, something like Star Trek or Star Wars, where there's no news media, there's very little of what we would recognize of our everyday lives. And so this sort of political or social satire can only really work if you are keeping it close to what we recognize as our own world.
But it is framed in a way that people recognize by being a military organization.
Yeah.
So it's got a great framing to let you know, okay, you know what a captain is. So you know what the subordinates are doing. You know what science is. You might not know what science is, but you know what science is. You know what a doctor is. So we've given you the trappings of familiarity, but we're setting it 300 years into the future.
Yeah, the kinds of stories that Star Trek tells. I mean, obviously, it's very much about current political issues, but in a way that is...
Allegory.
It's allegory. That's the thing, is where RoboCop can be very targeted satire.
Yeah.
It's about the specific rather than the abstract.
Yeah, I think that's why I still like this film.
Yeah, and yet both work. Yeah. You know, I don't think either is dated. So yeah, Star Trek The Next Generation would have been on TV at the same time.
It would have been, yeah.
Yeah, 87. And...
Good year.
Yeah, good year. Both still hold up. Both have messages that still resonate to this day, but they're told in completely different ways.
Yeah. It's funny to talk about science fiction like that, because there's also the idea of like hard science fiction and also soft science fiction. Science fiction is such a very thing. It's a genre, and of course there's subgenres within the subgenres. But it's funny that as fantastical as this movie is regarding the science, it's fairly hard in that the world around RoboCop itself is very modernistic. You know, no one's got holograms. Remake. And we have robots today that can walk on two legs, but, like, you know, they're very low. They...
Oh, no, they can do friggin' backflips and shit now. Yeah. They're pretty good. But, yeah, well, that's the thing, is hard science fiction doesn't mean that it's bound to a certain time period. So, yes, if...
No, but I mean, like, the technology is usually... In hard science fiction, the technology usually has to be close to real, or at least it may be, like, a few generations on. It still has to be very plausible. Like, a soft science fiction is like warp drive.
Yeah, but I think RoboCop is... But it just doesn't, yeah, it doesn't explain how RoboCop works in the specifics, although...
But it's plausible.
But it's plausible, yeah. I would actually, yeah, now I think about it, I would be more inclined to put RoboCop in the hard science fiction category than soft science fiction.
I mean, even like Ed 209, this giant hulking machine, it's kind of implausible when you think about it, because, like, you know, it does machines. But it's something you could see actually existing.
Yeah, it's not... stretching the realm of possibility.
Yeah. I love Ed 209.
Ed 209. Yeah, it's a great design, the sort of chicken shape.
I know, and it's I kind of want one. I've always wanted to build an Ed 209 costume.
Yeah. You know, the design they chose was very clever because through natural evolution, that particular body plan is one of the best at walking. So humans, our feet, they used to be hands. They're just repurposed hands. It's a very terrible design.
We used to be quadrupeds, like, you know, the splintered off version of us 10,000 odd years ago.
Yeah, it's got too many bones. There's a lot of things that, like, the toes don't even move properly, and half of them, and you get flat feet, and it's ridiculous.
And you get arthritis, and getting up in the morning.
Well, those are other problems with the rest of the body, but...
That's my life.
Yeah. Dinosaurs and modern-day birds, chickens, cassowary, emu, all of them, they have the most ideal, perfect leg that evolution has ever created because it's made to walk and stand and run.
Yeah.
Where ours were made to climb and grab things, which they don't really even do anymore, so...
You know, you think of, like, how, like, the look of the leg, you know, it looks like it's designed to absorb a shock.
Mm.
Anatomy is always interesting, and I need to study it a bit more, I must admit.
Oh, yeah, I definitely love it. Of it. It's the thing, like, as a transhumanist, like, I hate being human, I hate being organic, but also I'm gonna research the hell out of it out of spite.
Stupid humans.
Just so I know specifically why my body sucks.
I just like the idea of I am just going to change my body out of spite for humanity.
Yes.
I never asked for this, damn it.
I never asked for this. I'm a reverse Adam Jensen. I can't believe we've mentioned fucking Deus Ex in both episodes. It makes sense. Like,
as I love to bring up about RoboCop, it is about the idea of, like, humanity, lost humanity, regaining humanity, and, of course, humanity versus technology. So the themes are very...
compatible.
I was going to say sympathetic, but compatible is definitely...
simpatico.
Simpatico, that's the word I was looking for. So shall we finish up this deep dive into...
Yeah, I was thinking, should we have our gaslighting RoboCop segment? A show within a show?
Alex, how do you feel?
I feel fine, Dr. Norton.
So I've just got written down Sam Jacks being Bill O'Reilly, and I think I want to just keep calling him Sam Jacks from now on.
Sam Jacks, yep.
Sam Jacks being Bill O'Reilly, good to know he's practicing social distancing.
Yes. This goes on for some time. I recall that the opening segment, Sam just yelling at us. It actually sets up far less information than this 1 minute does, strangely enough.
It's being very blunt in setting up this whole idea. We can use robots around the rest of the world, but not in America, so we want American robots to be in America.
Yeah. RoboCop as a premise has... so much to say in terms of, you know, social and political commentary, and yet they talked about drones, which even when this film came out wasn't really a pressing concern. Like, I remember around 2010 or a little earlier than that, there was a lot of discussion about drones and that and the concern and how that would change warfare. But
that would make sense when you think about it, how long a movie does tend to get made, like 2010, because these were the original writers of the original movie, so Ed Neumeier and the other guy who I haven't written down, sorry other guy. Yeah, if that is like this whole big political thing of drones in 2010. I mean, between 2010 2014, yeah, I could kind of see that being the hot political topic. But the problem is, they then weigh that on this idea that America don't like AI and therefore we need a human AI because we can't have AI. What?
Yeah, what? There's so many ways they could have gone, but I think to me, the big issue is probably making it a topic that isn't immediately relatable to the audience.
Yeah.
That war is this thing that happens in far off places, not, you know, to most viewers of the film. It's just, it's an abstract concept.
Well,
so
it's funny because it doesn't even touch on the idea of like the American colonialism of the entire world by policing it.
Yeah, there's so much you could have done with this premise. And I haven't really read much expanded universe stuff for RoboCop. I know he's in comics and although it's probably not all that great.
The only thing I can say off the top of my head, I've read the RoboCop 2 Frank Miller comics, where he basically Frank Miller's the entire the entire series. They're good in a trashy kind of way, but that's about it. And I've read the classic RoboCop versus Terminator.
Yeah, which I have an action figure from that.
I remember back in the day thinking, oh man, why didn't they make this a movie? And now I'm kind of going, I am so glad they didn't make this a movie.
Yeah. That's the thing is, so out of Terminator and RoboCop, I think that it's like Alien versus Predator. Alien is actually quite an intellectual series. Predator is the action series.
Yeah.
So whoever wins, one of them loses because they were not made for this genre to begin with.
I recall hearing that just recently on a particular podcast called Prometheus by Minute, episode 111.
Yep. I'm tying all my themes together.
I don't mind a little bit of cross-promotion. Go watch Kung Pao Against the Minute.
Yeah. But yeah, I think RoboCop should, at its best, be about something.
Yeah.
It should be very, quite overt commentary on something. The same thing actually with Judge Dredd. You know, these are franchises that have stood the test of time because they're about things that do affect most people in their daily lives, like capitalism and police states and police brutality.
Well, Judge Dredd was originally intended to be a satire. And
yeah,
its context is in this kind of, the comic 2000 AD wasn't exactly a mainstream comic, you know, it was satire, it was over the top, and the problem is people do now take Dredd kind of at face value. God, I'm just thinking back to that goddamn Sylvester Stallone movie.
Oh, sorry, I just got a text that says, TikTok, here is your verification code. What the fuck? I've never gone anywhere near TikTok.
The robots are against us! Oh, wow.
I hope that was just someone putting their phone number wrong.
Yeah.
That's a bit scary.
Or it could be spam. You never know with these things.
Could be.
It could be a spam thing, you know. The kids are all into their TikTok, so therefore, like, the spam companies go, if we send them a verification thing,
they'll just do it.
If we send the verification link, we're going to steal all their credit cards. They're kids. They don't have credit cards. And if they did, they don't have money.
Yeah. So what would you make the RoboCop remake about?
I wouldn't, because I've had this gripe before, but I'll say it again. I think you shouldn't remake good movies. I think you should let the movies stand for themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
We live in an era where it's easy to access things. Parents give these kind of movies, no, not this kind of movie. Kids are discovering these things, usually for adults, like Ghostbusters was still a well-known thing before the remake happened.
Yeah, as we were saying last time.
Yeah, the remakes usually happen because there's still enough of a pop cultural interest.
I'd actually be more inclined to make RoboCop as this sort of, like, a soft reboot slash sequel.
I would do the exact same thing. That's why I think RoboCop Returns is something I would kind of do. I love the idea of, like, where would RoboCop be 30 years into the future?
Yeah. So do they just, like, put him in storage? Can he just go into storage? Does he have any rights as a person? Like, what happens when that corporation is out of business? He's a product.
Here's the kicker. Do you make the future a utopia or a dystopia?
Oh my god, that would be so...
Yes!
Oh, like in bloody Demolition Man.
Yes.
So he wakes up and it's like this really peaceful, sanitized world. Oh.
Well, that could be why RoboCop gets ice to a certain degree. He's basically eliminated crime, or at least it's eliminated low enough that he is no longer, you know, he's just this broken down piece of garbage because...
Yeah.
Okay, so this is a trope also in science fiction, the false utopia.
Yeah.
That's pretty much demolition.
Yes. I was actually looking into utopian fiction as a really early example. I'll see if I can dig it up. But the guy who wrote it was like, yes, this is the most beautiful, perfect future. And everyone else who read it was like, bruh, this is creepy. No one has any free will. There's like thought crimes. What the fuck are you talking about?
I remember reading somewhere, of course this has definitely changed now, but the only real true utopia that seems to have existed in fiction, at least in popular fiction, has been Star Trek. It's still,
yeah,
it's still classified as a utopian, or at least Earth is a utopia, people are still free. There's like, there's no...
The Borg, that's the true utopia.
Yeah, we are all a collective in the Borg.
Yeah.
There is, we are all equal.
Everyone's friends. Yeah. But that's why I love Star Trek, because, yeah, so rarely do we see a functioning utopia where, you know, there's no sinister thing hiding behind the scenes. They haven't sacrificed anything. In fact, people seem to be better off. And yet, there's still story, there's still drama, there's still conflict.
There's an episode of Deep Space Nine you're not up to because it's season...
Oh yeah, just a little bit ahead of me.
A little bit ahead of you. So I'm not going to go into specifics, but there's an episode called Paradise Lost, and it really pretty much deals with this. So what happens is the changeling threat has gotten to Earth. Or at least they believe it's gotten to Earth. There is a terrorist attack on Earth, and of course, it's Sisko and Odo return to Earth so they can start planning on how to find the changeling Gilbert traitor on Earth. And of course, things start getting worse, and of course, the one guy in Starfleet's like, no, we've got to have Starfleet personnel posted on every corner.
Is it an admiral who says this? Because it's always an admiral.
Of course it's an admiral. I'm not going to explain anything else more, but you can see where, like, even Star Trek, well, it tells you, like, society is perfect. It's a post-want civilization. They use that quite explicitly in TNG. Yet, the Federation, this space communism, this utopia, is still susceptible to some fuckery.
Yeah.
And I like that.
Yeah, that's the thing people seem to lose sight of, is utopia does not mean everything is okay all the time, because that's not possible. Utopia just means the society, it has no systemic problems, which is a whole different thing.
But every other piece of utopian fiction is usually, everything's fine, everything's great, just don't look underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where all the lower classes are still, it's almost like it's an allegory to real life.
Yeah.
The lower classes are still lowered, if not more so. I want to say, I think the Time Machine is probably the progenitor of that. H.G. Wells. Yeah. Because he got the Morlocks?
Yeah, the Morlocks.
Yeah. So there's a through line between that and Star Trek, because Star Trek just went, no, we don't want the nasty stuff, we want the good stuff.
Mm.
We want space communism. And we want space communism.
So I think our RoboCop remake or sequel...
Yeah, soft reboot.
I'm loving this idea already. Just, I think it would be more...
The existential RoboCop crisis. How can I prevent crime when there's no crime?
Yes. So I think my biggest issue with the remake is that there is no sense of humor. There's just no levity. There's absolutely nothing. There's no humanity to it.
Yeah.
Like even when we get up to the moments where he meets his family, it's played so... Not even just straight, it's played dead.
Yeah.
There's just nothing. So yeah, imagine this opening scene where instead of this Bill O'Reilly really aggressive coming at you, oh, war, people dying, no. It's just Sam Jackson dressed in bright colours, very, very nice, neat hair, looking just a little too perfect, like a Mr. Rogers type. Yeah. And he's just reporting the news and everything's just nice and wonderful. And now we end the news with some puppies, you know, just shit like that.
Well, you got to remember, in the first minutes of the remake, it undercuts Sam Jackson's character. Oh, God, I can't remember who his character is. I literally just watched the bloody minute. Like, that's so forgettable there it is.
Yeah, it's yeah.
In the beginning opening, he's doing voice exercises. All that is voice exercises, which is things they do. It kind of undercuts the seriousness in actually also viewing his performance through the lens of the news producers.
Mm.
It's always cutting to the producers. We're not watching the actual screen. We're watching him as a performance. And I think that just, the behind the curtain doesn't work.
Yeah, I really didn't understand why they opened the film with it's just black, yeah, and then you hear his vocal exercises.
Oh, it's because the original one did it.
Huh?
It's just because the original one did it. That's pretty much it. The original started off with a news broadcast, so we got to start off with a news broadcast.
No. I mean the vocal warm-up.
I think they're trying to add a little bit of that kind of satire and... Yeah, we're behind the scenes. This guy's making noises. But it doesn't work, because the rest of the movie doesn't support that either.
Yeah, I feel like the opening scene of a movie should basically tell you everything you need to know about that movie. And the opening of... Well, the opening of the remake, it kind of does tell you what it's about, but... I think that specifically just the vocal warm-ups thing, I just go, you're actually misleading me because you're making me think the tone is going to be a little bit sillier than it is, but it's played so straight throughout.
Yeah, that's why I think it does not work.
Yeah, it's not giving us anything of value, which...
It would work better if Michael Keaton was the protagonist.
Yeah.
We're sending up capitalism, but they're not.
So that would be really interesting. So... We have Michael Keaton wants to bring RoboCop back for whatever reason. We can come up with his motivation later, but he digs up RoboCop and sort of just parades him around. And yeah, you see how RoboCop adapts to this modern world, and that would be really interesting. Yeah, maybe you could even bring back the original Lewis.
Well, unfortunately, that depends on how you want to, what part you want to set in the canon, because she dies in RoboCop 3.
No, then they made two movies.
Okay, yeah, they made. I'm fully on board with that canon. They only made two movies.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they only... Just like the new Star Wars movies. I'm pretty sure. Like, you know, they did like two trilogies and then the latest one, they just ended it with The Last Jedi.
I thought they only made two movies. It was called Empire Strikes Back and The Last Jedi.
No, Last Jedi, man. You can't take that from me. But yeah, they only made two RoboCop movies.
I must admit, I would love to see Michael Keaton come back into the remake. You know, have him be the old man.
I think he was good casting. They just didn't do anything with him.
I've never seen a bad Michael Keaton performance.
No, oh god, he's so good in Spider-Man.
Yes! The Vulture. How could you make that character really that good? And then got Michael Keaton. It's like, okay, you make that character really that good.
Yeah, because the Vulture is just a cartoonish, weird old man.
He's an old man with wings.
With a birdie costume. And they made him into the scariest motherfucker you have ever seen.
I love that they made him a guy that got fucked by the system.
Yeah.
And he went, fuck you. I know how to deal with this, and I will use that to my advantage. The scene in the car between Peter and the Vulture.
Yes.
Oh, that was so good.
It was so tight.
That is one of the best scenes in a superhero movie ever.
But actually, I really do like Joel Kinnaman as RoboCop. I think his performance was good. He's well cast. He's one of those actors who has been in so much shit. He's a good actor.
Yeah.
I love him. I like his look.
He's also Rick Flag, isn't he?
He's Rick Flag. Yeah. Although, you know, maybe this new Suicide Squad might redeem the mess that came before.
Well, it's funny that you've only got, three recurring characters in the Suicide Squad? And it's Kinnaman... Oh, sorry, no, four. Because you've got Viola Davis, Kinnaman, and Jai Courtney, Margot Robbie.
Yeah.
Four characters in the four actors. Because they hadn't introduced who Idris Elba was, and everyone was thinking he was replacing Will Smith, but he's actually a different character.
I'm sad there's no Bane. There should have been Bane.
I think if they were going for more the Gal Simone versions, they seem to be basing it more off the 70s Suicide Squad, which pretty much makes a lot of sense. It's James Gunn.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he's also... Joel Kinnaman is...
Lone Ranger, isn't he?
He's in Altered Carbon, and in what?
Isn't he Lone Ranger?
No, that's Armie Hammer.
Ah, that's it.
Different sort of almost blonde big dude with the square jaw. Yeah. But
the other thing I've seen him in is being like the Man from U.N.C.L.E., Henry Cavill again.
Yeah.
Underrated film.
Yeah. Shit, lost my train of thought.
You're talking about Altered Carbon.
Altered Carbon, which I actually just watched again last night. So I watched the pilot and just went, nah, I don't know. And then I was just really thinking about the concept of that show and going, that's actually quite interesting. And I wonder if they do much with like the psychology of being in a different body.
So I've only barely heard of Altered Carbon. So give me a quick rundown.
So it's based on a novel, cyberpunk story. This guy died 250 years ago, but his memory has been put into a new body. And and now he's basically being a detective because it's, you know, it's a cyberpunk story, so it's got to be neo-noir.
Cool.
And so his name is Takeshi Kovacs. So he was actually Japanese-Russian and played by a Japanese actor. And then for season one, he's played by Joel Kinnaman. Season two, he's played by Anthony Mackie.
Oh, the Falcon.
Yeah. And that's why I kind of got interested in it again, going, oh, okay, so there's a different actor every season. That's really interesting. And they've cancelled it anyway, but...
Yeah, of course they would.
You know, that's me. I'll hear about a show that's been cancelled, like, oh, I'm going to get into it now, and then get sad.
It's a good show. Of course it gets cancelled.
Yeah. I don't like shows that are an hour long. Mm-hmm. I always feel like most of them do not fill out the time well. But other than that, yeah, no, there are some interesting concepts there.
That has been my modern gripe a lot of on TV, especially drama writing, where it's like, you have to fill out an hour, an episode for X amount of episodes. This is why one of my all-time favourite shows is Leverage. It was an hour show, so... 45 minutes, realistically. And it only ran for 13 episodes per season.
Mm.
Always been my gripe of, like, the classic long-form run shows is always, like, 26 episodes, 45 minutes.
Yeah, like Star Trek.
Yeah.
I'm amazed Star Trek did as well as it did. I think that it has a real great success rate, given they had to turn out so much.
There's always going to be varying qualities, particularly in the writing, but there's always going to be varying quality throughout a 26-episode season. You get some great episodes, you get some... good episodes, you get some medium episodes, and you get some shit episodes.
Yeah.
That's pretty much across almost any television show. But what I loved about Leverage is that they had half the production run, sometimes 10, so it's like 10 to 13 episodes.
Mm.
So that really means they weren't trying to stretch out for a full run. So I reckon that actually helped their writing, because it's also, it's a TV show based on crime. And John Rogers was a showrunner. He has this, like, galactic brain encyclopedia of, like, scams, con arts and stuff like that. But there's always going to be a chance of repetition. And there's always something new to find. But you've only got a certain amount of ways you can write a show. It's a very formulaic show. It basically does have beats, does have a setup, middle, and ending almost the exact same way. You know the good guys are going to win. Yeah. But the writing itself was really strong. And I think having that short amount of episodes actually helped it.
Like the classic Sherlock Holmes stories, you know, you know the general format, and yes, Sherlock will always win in the end, but if it's well written, you will come back every single time.
Exactly.
So these days, I actually think the streaming style is pretty good. Shorter seasons, bigger budgets.
Yeah.
I think we're in another golden age of renaissance for television.
You spend that money you were going to spend on 10 extra episodes on the other 10, you're going to get some better shit, in theory.
It's just like, well, obviously, with Picard, the biggest issue is just that...
it was written for 10 hours and then cut into 10 hours, and it has no pacing.
Mm.
The pacing is so...
so bad.
Terrible.
Anyway, we've gone way off tangent.
I know. I'm going to steal your phrase again. That about wraps it up. Mm-hmm. And Connor, where can we find you?
So I am on traviandesigns.com, TRAVIAN, and we will have a Facebook group for the 60 Seconds to Comply podcast, and maybe some other...
it should be up by the time this is released. Yes.
Yeah, go search for it, and there might be other social media pages that we do. I don't know.
There'll be links. Mm. I run the Fanboy Crossing Media Hub, if you want to call it that, but I'm probably most well known now for Kung Pao Enter the Minute. If people are actually watching that, please go watch that. So yeah, thank you once again, and we'll see you later. Thank you.